Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, we discuss McSweeney's new quarterly issue, McSweeney's 78, The Make-Believers, featuring writers of the Vietnamese diaspora. We are joined by contributors and guest editors of the issue, T. Bui and Vu Tran, as well as McSweeney's quarterly editor, Rita Bullwinkle. You can learn more about their work in the episode description. This conversation originally took place April 7th, 2025, and was recorded via Zoom. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Well, thank you, T, Rita, and Vu for joining me today on this episode of AWN Author Talks from the American Writers Museum. I'm excited to talk to you all about the forthcoming issue of McSweeney's, which is fantastic. I've been reading through it and can't wait to see the finished product also. So before we get into that, though, can we go around and all of you introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell us a little bit about your relation to this issue of McSweeney's? T, would you like to get us started?
Sure. My name is T. Bui, and I am normally known as a cartoonist, but here I got to be a writer because I was hanging out with a bunch of writers. And this issue is, I don't know, it's been an amazing playground for me to get to try on all kinds of hats and be pushed by everyone at McSweeney's to be more weird and more experimental, which was exactly the right that we wanted coming out of an amazing writer's residency experience.
Great, thank you. And how about yourself?
First of all, I just noticed, T, your hair is amazing.
I concur. It's amazing. But, I know, I've been thinking it the whole time.
but also, all your hair, as someone with no hair, all your hair looks so good. I'm kind of annoyed right now.
My hair for you all. I also heard last year at the age of 49 that I have wavy hair, so I'm like really leaning into it now.
Nice. My name is Vu Tran. I guess I'm a novelist. I also teach. I've been teaching at University of Chicago. I teach fiction writing and literature. And yeah, I was lucky enough to get invited to this residency in the south of France, which we can talk more about, where T was, and we got to know each other even better then. And yeah, it just led to this really wonderful opportunity to work together, really for the first time. And it was a wonderful experience all around. So
great, thank you for that. Yes, I do want to hear more about that retreat and the residency. And but Rita, before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Rita Bullwinkle, and I am a novelist as well as the editor of McSweeney's Quarterly, one of the issues which we are here today celebrating. I'm relatively new to the Quarterly. I came in on as editor at the end of last year, and when I came on, I was so fortunate that our founding editor, Dave Edgars, had been having this idea. I think, T, I'm interested to hear more about the origin story with you of this issue of writers of the Vietnamese diaspora on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. And so I've had the total privilege of getting to work with T and Vu these last several months and actualize their incredible artistic vision, both visually and linguistically, for this like totally unique and par none art object that I'm just so proud of.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It is more than just a magazine, you know, and so it's fascinating. So I do want to spend some time on this residency that was kind of the start of it. And so T and Vu, maybe you can tell us about how that came to be and what it was like there, and how you continued that creative spirit even post residency. Would love to hear more about what that was like.
I don't know the short version. Well, basically, it was between September 1st and September 14th. It was 2 weeks. First 2 weeks of September back in 2022, right? Am I getting my dates right?
23, no?
Yes, 2023. Oh my gosh. Jeez. Dude, that's what I mean. And yeah, I mean, I had worked with D-Van a little bit. I think, T, you worked more with D-Van, the diasporic Vietnamese artist network that Isabel Palou and Viet Thanh Nguyen founded together. And this was the first official writing residency that the organization was sponsoring. And they were bringing together, originally it was 10 other, there were 10 people there, but there was Isabel and there was also an administrator who's also Vietnamese background. There were originally going to be, I think, two other writers who ended up, one from Vietnam and one from France, that couldn't make it for personal issues. But the ones who made it there, we had writers from Vietnamese writers from France, Vietnamese writers from America, and there's also a Vietnamese writer from Israel. And yeah, it was just 2 weeks to kind of a writing residency where we went to a small town in the south of France. I think it was like an hour ride from Montpellier. And I mean, we wrote in the afternoon, wrote in the morning, but we also did all these other things. I mean, we, you know, T and I and a few other people would go to the river in the afternoon and swim, walk like 20, half an hour to the river and this very idyllic spot. And swim. We went to the Mediterranean at one point. You know, my favorite parts were in the evenings when we would eat dinner in this beautiful garden under these huge trees. And I think there is an illustration of it, right, T? In the
there
issue?
There is. No, there absolutely is. In the beginning of the...
Yes, that's one of them. Yeah.
And then there's also an illustration. It's, I mean, right at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. But these were great evenings because we would talk into the night sometimes and we would talk about everything, you know, that there were recurring topics, but many of those conversations ended up in the issue, you know, in one way or another, whether it's directly or it's inspired, you know, conversations that or things that we wrote about in the issue in our contribution. So, and I don't want to go on too long about this. I could kind of go on way too long. But the residency kind of culminated in this symposium in Paris, where all of us, at that point, it was like 10 of us. We had, you know, conversations with a couple of other Vietnamese writers that joined us for, I think, three different conversations at Jean-Pierre Melville Library in Paris. And that itself culminated in me having my birthday, which is September 17th in Paris. And I was really afraid. I was going to go home early, but I thought, you know what? Even if I spend it alone, it's still worth having a birthday in Paris. So why not? But it ended up, you know, a lot of people from the residency, I think everyone but two ended up, you know, we had dinner. First of all, we spent the day at the museums together, a few of us, and then all of us gathered to have dinner, a wonderful dinner at an outdoor restaurant. And then afterwards, we were headed to someone's hotel for wine or something like that. And on the way, we crossed one of those bridges on the Seine, and there was like this huge, like, marching band. It's like a 12-piece marching band that was actually DJing a party on the riverbanks. And so we joined it. And so my 48th birthday ended with a huge dance party on the banks of the Seine, which is, wow, is just amazing. It was a perfect way to end the trip and a perfect way to spend my birthday. So
I love that. Yeah. They were playing for you, for all of you. That's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But to sum it up, we basically had like a 2 week romantic date with like 10 people.
Exactly.
It was really fun. It was very romantic. There was a lot of wine and cheese and
a lot.
And like talking about literature and our families. So we got really close. A lot, you know, there are a lot of residencies out there and they're all amazing, but this one was particularly amazing. And so what happened was, I think I was coming back to the Bay Area. I had this crazy life plan where I was going to go there and then come back to the Bay Area and then move to New Orleans, like all at the same time. And I think I was like, I squeezed in a visit with Dave Eggers. He and I collaborated on a screenwriting for a TV show that will never be made. That's about Vietnamese fishermen in Texas in the 70s and 80s who got attacked by the KKK and won. But that will never get made. But like we became really good friends over the course of writing that project. And so we occasionally will take a walk together. We like to talk about like life and art while taking a hike in the bay. And I was telling him about this amazing residency that I had just gone to. And he, I think, really loves the idea of when artists really support each other and like just help each other out. And I think he was thinking about the Impressionists and how they would support each other even like past their deaths to like collect their works and elevate each other's careers. And so he was like really taken with this idea that like a bunch of Vietnamese diasporic writers had like had such an amazing experience and it was so full of joy. So he asked us if we, he asked me if we would want to like take over an issue. And when I took this idea back to the group, it was so funny because everyone was like scared. It was like we had all been like offered something that like was too good to be true, and everyone was like trying to like back away from the bomb or what, like. And then it kept getting worse because like McSweeney's is a nonprofit and also like really known for like really off the wall like design and like very elaborate stuff that like no other publisher will let you do. And so when we were like throwing around these extravagant ideas that were totally encouraged by people at McSweeney's, our very refugee-oriented
So
Vietnamese
true.
writers was like totally terrified. And they were like, no, we can't do that. Tell like
Yeah, are you sure? We're so used to being forced to draw within the lines, you know? And yeah, it was weird for us.
Team Vu, I haven't shared with you that it was on Friday, I got to meet Isabel because I was dropping copies of the issue to her so she could take them to the Night of Ideas event, which is this amazing event at the San Francisco Public Library. And I got the total joy of being with her when she was seeing the issue for the first time. And she was like, oh my God. And she was like, they said they were going to do it, but they did it. It was so fun to be with someone as they were unfurling the issue that had been so integrally involved with it. She's such an important contributor, but ha not in the production and design elements, perhaps. So that was a really fun, rare joy.
Yay, yes,
Well,
it was full of joy.
I mean, Isabel is so much a part of like the experience. I mean, she kind of she brings so much care, and she was always caring for everyone in every specific way that you can imagine, you know, trying to make sure everybody's experience was great. And but really, it's just like the joy and enthusiasm she brings to everything really made the experience great. And again, we tried to kind of capture that in the issue.
I mean, I love so many things about the issue. Something that I'm not going to say this is my favorite, but there are many favorite parts of the issue. But Isabel wove together this incredible group poem that's published as like a separate book with separate art. The issue itself has, it's really like five separate objects. I include the menu of your of T and Vu, yours designed, as really being a separate object as well. It's such an interesting piece of the issue, this idea of collaborative writing. Very experimental, very Olympian, frankly, very French.
Yeah, it's about one of the things that it's about home, it's called Nhà, home. And of course the word Nhà is the Vietnamese word for home. So all of us were tasked with kind of writing about our ideas on home. And then Isabel took all of our writing, which is very, we have poets, we have essayists, we have fiction writers. And we kind of wrote our own kind of version on the idea of home, and then she just wove it together really beautifully, and that's what the piece is.
That kind of makes me think of two things, or kind of maybe a similar question, but like the because you all are coming from a different genres or forms of art, and also different countries and different familiarities with the three languages, really, that French, Vietnamese, and English were the, from my understand, the predominant, and then English was the, interestingly enough, the common ground for you all. So I'm just curious, and I guess, yeah, maybe there's a two separate questions, but all of you have different interests and skills and languages that you know and are comfortable with. But then how does that dynamic work in a group, and what was that like, both as like personal person-to-person relations, but also how that experience impacted your work and creative pursuits also?
This was the first time I've written a short story in prose entirely for publication, and it was weird. I did it because I was inspired by being around a bunch of writers. Normally, when I do comics, I take out all the descriptive language because I don't need it, and I had to put it back in, and it took so much time. So gaining appreciation for words and pacing. So I felt like it was a really great opportunity for me to grow as a writer. And then I got to do like my visual art like magic, which is more magical when you're around a bunch of writers who don't know how to draw, because then anything that you do looks really cool to them. So I had fun with that, and it was really also wonderful when in the design process the opportunity came up to invite three other artists to work on the covers of the different parts. One, just so we could get it done within a timely manner so that we weren't waiting on me for everything. And two, so that we could bring in more talent. And so we brought in Maddie Huynh, who is like a legendary illustrator from New York and Australia, and then Yui Va, who did this thing of beauty.
Oh, I love that cover.
He's probably the most Vietnamese out of all of us, so I picked him in particular. I was like, we need someone to ground us. I wanted like there to be a part of the issue that really felt like it was authentically Vietnamese, and so we needed somebody who had roots in Vietnam, who understood like folklore, and who had like enough references in his head to pull from. So he actually pulled from like an ancient style of block printing. And like a particular topic called the rat wedding that he like reinterpreted for our cover.
Oh wow. Yeah. That is a
And
stunning image. Yeah, that and knowing all the history is even makes it even more impactful. Wow.
then because like diasporic Vietnamese aesthetics are so like all over the place, like most of us grew with like our culture being reproduced in very cheap ways, like on newsprint and bad graphic design. Or like children's books that were like from like the 50s, because like we didn't have access to like better materials for learning anything. So we wanted to replicate that too. So in our glossary of broken Vietnamese by Duan Bui, where she like writes this hilarious as like collection of her own definitions of like certain Vietnamese expressions, we wanted to have like a like that kind of like 1950s children's textbook aesthetic.
Yeah, that works. That's great. Yeah.
I mean, for me, that, and I don't know if this is answering your question, but if it's a question about like language and translation, I feel like the whole, there's so many aspects of it that are about translation for me. First of all, the experience was so interesting for me to meet other. First of all, I did not grow up around many Vietnamese people at all. In many ways, this was the most Vietnamese people I'd been around for this sustained amount of time in my life. I grew up in Oklahoma, lived in Iowa, Las Vegas, very few Vietnamese people. And so it was wonderful for me. It was really educational for me to see, for example, how, like, just that glossary of broken Vietnamese, to see how we still share the same kind of language that's been kind of filtered through are very different upbringings in different countries and different cultures, that I could still kind of understand, just implicitly understand what Duan was saying about a certain word, even though she saw it through a slightly different lens. I just found that fascinating. But the most fascinating actually aspect of the editing part for me was this part where I, and it was an act of translation that I just, it was so educational for me. So there are parts of it. So, like, Duan and Isabel are English is their second language or third language even. And so when I was editing their English, like for Duan example, when I was editing her English, at a certain point it became more efficient not to send her every correction and ask her how she would do it. At a certain point, she said, "You know, Vu, go ahead and translate it in the way you would say it." And that became so fascinating because I had to kind of not only translate her kind of slightly broken English into more kind of, I don't know, eloquent English or just more conversational English, but I also had to do it in her voice, the way I was translating it, and her meaning. And at a certain point, I had to kind of bring my own understanding, say, like in this one, of these terms, my own kind of understanding of these terms, and bring my own. I mean, it was still all Duan, right? But it became this more collaborative exercise for us, where I was kind of not just translating her language, but translating her personality. And I just found it fascinating. I felt like I hope I understood her well, you know, but I felt like I understood her a lot better through that process of editing her work. So there was a literal part of translation, you know, where we actually had translators translate stuff for us from, say, like French to English or Hebrew to English, but also just that part of it that was constantly translating each other. It was really meaningful for me.
Yeah, and an interesting point too. Kind of spending more time with that person, like you said, you understand them better, or trying to think like them. And yeah,
Exactly.
one a sort of outcome I wouldn't anticipate necessarily, or I didn't think about.
I didn't either. I didn't either. It was a nice surprise for me. It was difficult though, but it was a good, difficult surprise. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
There are a few pieces where the writers wrote about each other. Like there was this really sweet dialogue happening between Anna and Moy, who was like the eldest of our group, and Paul Tran, who's one of the youngest, where they wrote these very admiring pieces about each other. And it was really special to get to watch that like unfold. It took a while to get Paul's pieces. And when we got them, it was
Yeah.
like
They're worth the wait.
Worth the
Definitely.
wait. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I tasked myself with writing a parody of the whole residency experience, which was a process of like really thinking about each person's personality and like basing my parody off of like real observed behavior and quirks. And that was really fun. It was like my sort of immature love letter to everybody there.
That's exactly how it reads. I was going to ask you about that one, because it
Immature love letter.
yeah,
Great.
I admittedly I haven't finished it yet, so I don't know the mystery behind the murder, but I kind of know the ways in which each writer is kind of mentioned in a certain way. I was going to ask you about that, so I'm glad you mentioned it already, because that is a hilarious piece and heartfelt also, that I can, so to be, it does read like an homage to the residency and the people there. Yeah, so it's great.
Yeah, we like brainstormed a lot of ideas together as a group about what we thought would be funny for a McSweeney's issue. And a lot of the ideas like were th a lot of ideas were thrown at the wall, and some like made it to the book and some didn't. Like my idea about a bunch of Vietnamese your mama jokes like was conceptually very were really hard to write actually. But everybody seemed to like the idea of like a retelling of our residency as a Vietnamese fairy tale. So that's what I started with, but it turns out like Vietnamese fairy tales have a lot of horror elements, and I was also inspired by the McSweeney's horror issue that was a few issues back. So that's where that comes from.
I love T's story because I think it really embodies our kind of collective sense of humor. Like, you know, we're very, I think we all have kind of dark sense of humor, wouldn't you say, T?
Probably, yeah, it's a way of coping.
Yeah. I mean, I just love it. It's hilarious. I don't come off very well, but I kind of like it. I think it's weirdly enough accurate in some ways.
That's why it's an immature love letter, because you can bash the hardest at the people that you love and who you feel will trust you. So I was like, well, who can I kill amongst them?
Yeah.
The thing that's behind it that not everyone will know, maybe people who are who grew up with Vietnamese fairy tales will know, but there are a lot of like archetypes that like come up in Vietnamese fairy tales. There's always like a magical animal. There's always like a lot of sacrifice and like filial piety, and like somebody always dies a really bad death. So I had to think about, okay, who's going to be the innocent that I kill? And you know, who's going to be the magical creature, who's the villain? And it was fun to assign those roles.
Yeah. And well, it's also interesting because, I mean, Vu, your story also has a sort of magical animal, like the cat, you know, or that's maybe it's symbolic of, and also kind of maybe a bit of a ghost story aspect to it. So yeah, curious about that coincidence, or also is that, you know, pulling from a history?
I only thought about it later. There was a black cat that Bao was obsessed with at our we had we were we stayed at this 18th century chateau. Isabel doesn't believe it's a chateau, but anyway, but it was this very magical place. It's an Airbnb run by this wonderful Belgian couple that we all became very close with. They really became part of our group in certain ways, and they were just so lovely. We went on day trips with he would drive us around. He drove us to the Mediterranean, you know, on a long day trip. And but anyway, was it their cat, T? Was
They
that
had
their
two
cat? It
cats.
wasn't a
I had two cats.
And one was a black one. And Bao was obsessed with it. Bao was always taking pictures of it and everything. So maybe that it came out of that. I mean, it was a story that I had written a while ago, and I kind of overhauled it, and then kind of overhauled it again. But you know, it's strange how maybe it's not so strange, but you know, a lot of the work, at least in this issue, these patterns, these themes and topics constantly came up. Whether it's, you know, the magical aspect of things, magical creatures, but you know, mothers came up constantly. You know, trauma, obviously, the past. There's so much about the past in a lot of these works. And, you know, and those are not specific to the Vietnamese diasporic experience. They're very universal themes, but we continue to return to them in our conversations, and they end up in the work. And for me, I guess the only thing I can really say about my story is that I think it ended up being about, like, you know, the thing, something I think about a lot being older now, which is like how you are different people throughout your life and how we try to kind of like run away from certain people that we've been in life, and how we sometimes are nostalgic for certain people that we've been and kind of wish that we could be that again. So yeah, and it's something that, you know, I ended up talking about with a lot of people at the residency as well.
Thank you for that. And that, and mentioning mothers and the dark sense of humor also, it made me recall the introduction or foreword to the issue, which I'll ask for one of you to pronounce the word that essentially means full of shit.
Oh, by that.
Oh,
That again?
By
Bay
that.
dat.
Yeah,
But,
wait.
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's very southern. It's by that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a more northern accent, so I say it slightly differently.
Interesting. Good. Yeah. Good to know. But I just love that. If you want to kind of talk about that, that concept and why you chose to sort of foreground the rest of the issue with that, that whole aspect.
I feel like I should pull up like what was written by Duan, because it's so well done, but it's very long. So we'll save that for readers. So by that means, well, it's first of all, it's an insult that was thrown at us by a lot of our parents when we were like coming up and becoming writers and artists and wearing black clothes or too much makeup. Like any of that kind of funny behavior got met with the expression by that, which means to be pretentious, full of shit, above your raisin. So we just reclaimed that insult for ourselves, and we took the definition that it is that means to pretend and make believe, which is what we do as writers and artists, and that's why the issue is called The Make Believers.
I love that, and I will quote also from that real quick. It's Our relationship to the word by debt is much like our love for our parents. The only way to make it not hurt is to embrace it and have as much fun as we can. And so I like that as sort of, yeah, the humor of it, and yeah, just flipping it around. And you make a great point about being creative people and writers and fiction writers especially, and that, you know, that is what we do. And sometimes, oftentimes, it is the make-believe that allows us to have the most truth too. So that's why I also appreciate that naming of the issue.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier when Vu, you were talking about the work of translation and also like not having grown up around Vietnamese people. Like as children of the diaspora, there were a lot of things that were missing for us, like a sense of ourselves, a sense of our history, a sense of our language and culture. And it wasn't getting provided because there was this rupture, right, caused by war and displacement. And so we basically had to make what it is that we needed, and that took a while. So we had to kind of hang on to our confused children for a long time and brought them with us into adulthood and our professional lives so that we could make the thing that our kids selves needed.
You know, the funny thing too is that at least with my mom, but I think that a lot of Vietnamese mo parents, you see moms though for some reason, that you know the
All of us.
it's true. But it's like this accusation that my mom would make, you know, they that. Which is basically you're being emotional for no reason. You're making it more than what it is. And there was always an element for me of like, don't express too much. Don't be melodramatic about something, right? And I don't know, the there's something about talking just about this word is like a license to just be more sincere and emotional, which isn't something that again, maybe it's just my family, but it's just it wasn't something that we had licensed to be, you know, to do. And yeah, I was also going to say you're absolutely right that you know, as children we were accused of making up shit, of being full of shit, and being too much in our heads and imagining things, and then you realize after a while that that is the very way that's the very way that we have, you know, gotten closer to figuring out certain truths for ourselves is like our imagination, you know, and it's not something that you intuitively think is the right route to truth and fact or whatever, but that's it's been our way of doing it, you know. We've only been able to do it because we were able to be full of shit and make up stuff,
Right. Yeah.
especially in the absence of like just like T says, in the absence of an environment where you have support or you see people like yourself, things that reflect you. In that absence, you have no choice but to imagine.
Yeah. Fun fact, there are actually more Vietnamese speakers in the US than there are French speakers, but you wouldn't know that from the infrastructure that exists for learning those languages.
Wow.
There aren't any like, you know, there are a lot of like French immersion schools that you can send your kids to. If you want to do that with Vietnamese, you got to make them go to Saturday school, and then they're really sad.
Interesting, yeah. You know, this issue is one example, one result of the residency. I'm curious if the group chat is still alive and well. How is it coming along? Or do you still collaborate often, or you know, get together and hang out post residency?
It's been a little harder, you know. There are a couple of like personal tragedies within the group that kind of made that tough. And then, you know, what we realized, you know, T had mentioned this, you know, we had a lot of ambitions for the issue, and then our lives just got in the way. You know, people had jobs and life changes, and it's been a little bit more difficult to kind of stay in touch, especially with the group chat. Hopefully, this issue will kind of revive it a little bit more.
Yeah, even though we don't get to hang out as much as we hoped to after the residency, we made this beautiful baby together, and it will always exist. And I hope that, like, you know, all the people who were too scared to believe that we could have something nice made by us for us, like, will now go, we did it, and maybe a ripple effect, like when you make believe hard enough, then you get other people to believe that we can have nice things among other other values that I'm hoping to push out into the world.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. But as we're getting close to wrapping things up here, is there anything else about this issue, your time in France, or connecting with the diaspora in the way that you have? Anything else that we haven't touched on that anyone wants to cover?
Well, let me also say, and we haven't said this, that Rita and everyone at McSweeney's, I'm still kind of stunned at how supportive you all were. Like, I'm still stunned that you all can kind of do things like this. I mean, I just don't know how anyone does it. I'm still, and the thing is, I need to stress that we could have made it even like more crazy. And Rita and everyone was always game. I mean, I was just so impressed by that, but all along the way, it was just a lot of support and a lot of, kind of this is up to you all, and we just really appreciated that. And again, we're not used to it. I'm almost 50, and I don't know why growing up Vietnamese has made it hard for me to kind of like just be cool with someone just giving me full rein. I'm always waiting for someone to kind of put borders on things for me, because that's how it was kind of raised, and it was just a really freeing experience that way.
I think I have freed myself of those shackles a little bit in advance. And so anytime I'm given an opportunity to put a bunch of Vietnamese people on a cover, I do. And anytime people give me a big budget for ideas, I say, let's use it. So it was it was a very therapeutic group therapeutic experience that I'm so like grateful to have been a part of. McSweeney's was the perfect enabler for a bunch of Vietnamese people with issues.
I also want to say that this is the cover of the cigar box, right? Which it opens, right? But this is one of my favorite photos from the residency. And this is an actual photo. And it's not all of us, unfortunately, but so we did a lot of smoking, but half the people here don't smoke. It was a kind of like well, how would you describe it to you? Well, it was the ne last night at the residency, and our hosts had were so kind to kind of bring the community to town. They invited a bunch of people. Who knew all these people would come for a reading? And afterwards, we had food and party and dancing, and we ended up in the kitchen, and a few of us were smokers. Actually, the biggest smoker, Paul, is not smoking in this photo, which is I find funny, but. This, I think, captures the make-believe because, I think half the people here don't smoke, but we were all kind of posing. And I feel like this is all our childhood self in many ways as well. So, but it really captures like the feeling of the residency for us,
Your
for me at
rendering
least.
of that cover, that painting, you all look so glamorous and so cool. It's really awe-inspiring. Like, wow. Yeah, the cool factor is like very, very, very high.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
That's something
agreed.
that you can do with art.
And that image is on the cigar box that comes with the issue. Rita, maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about everything else about the issue and timeline.
So, okay, I'm going to do my best to verbally explain. So, the issue is housed in this incredible cigar box that has art on every single one of its surfaces. And then when you open it, it reveals this gold foil stamped menu, which is one of my most, I think, one of the most thrilling experimental pieces of writing I've ever read. Teen Vu, one of the first things you guys said was, what when you had all of the pieces, were what if we made a menu that was kind of like a table of contents, but not, and was our recommendations for the order in which you could consume the issue, which I thought was so thrilling and amazing. I love the idea of like of eating the issue, of like taking it into yourself and having an appetizer and a main course and a dessert and an amuse-bouche. And it's just so fun and playful, but also intellectually rigorous, which was just like a thrilling idea to be able to execute. So then you take
Yeah, I
off the
was totally
menu.
tea. I was tea, yeah.
So then you take off the menu and you have these three incredible book objects. The main course, the thing that holds most of the main course or whatever, as you will, which is, as we talked about, just beautifully, beautifully illustrated. The group poem, which is its own separate object, and the incredible and singular glossary of broken Vietnamese. And yeah, I mean, I feel like the issue as object was Tia. I mean, I think it was really a collaboration between you and our art director, Sunra. And it was really fun to be on CC on those emails and watch you guys bat ideas back and forth. Vu, I don't know if you felt this way, but it was an awe
Yeah,
to
totally.
be kind of a to be like a bystander. And yeah, so that's how the T and Sunra really collaborated to bring the visual language of the issue to the forefront. And that was really exciting to witness.
Sunra is so fun to work with. Everything's a yes and.
Yeah.
Sunra Thompson, our art director at McSweeney's, total genius. Nate, the lunchbox that you previously mentioned, which has all these illustrations from Art Spiegelman on it, a Sunra creation. So many things that a lot of people immediately associate with the aesthetic of McSweeney's and the beautiful product design. It is all the master comes from the mastermind that is Sunra.
That's great. Yeah, like I said, that lunchbox is great, and the sports cards too are fun. So when can folks pick up this issue, or is are pre-orders available now?
Pre-orders are available. You should pre-order it. Everyone should pre-order it. The issue will be available everywhere on April 30th, which is a very, very meaningful historical day. The day that Saigon fell, and again, published on the actual 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. And yeah, we're really excited that the issue is going to be in bookstores all across the country. And are thrilled that here in San Francisco, the Tenderloin History Museum and the Asian Art Museum are taking the issue into their like permanent retail stores so that when anyone visits, Little Saigon in the Tenderloin, or anyone visits the Asian Art Museum in San Francisco, the issue is always going to be something that you're going to, for the foreseeable future, that you're going to be able to go in and buy, which I think is super exciting because the collections of both of those two museums are really deeply in conversation in many ways, I think, with the issue. And I will say a brief plug. We are really excited to have a series of release events coming up on Thursday, May 1st, here in San Francisco. Vu and Doan are going to participate. And I think one of the most max, I think, no, just I'm not even going to qualify. It's the most maximalist event I have ever heard of, participated in. Yeah, it's so multifaceted and exciting. Here's the event pitch, which is that this is what's going to happen, is that it's all online. I'm trying to remember the time. I think it's at 3:45 at the Asian Art
Yeah.
Museum of San Francisco, in Samsung Hall, their beautiful, beautiful main auditorium. Vu and Doan are going to be in conversation with one of their brilliant curators, Natasha, and they're going to talk about how the issue is in conversation with the permanent holdings of the Asian Art Museum. And then after that conversation and bites and beverages, there's going to be a local walking tour guide that's going to walk everyone who wants from that event through Little Saigon and the Tenderloin to this incredible venue in Myrtle, outdoor space in Myrtle Alley, where the Tenderloin Museum is hosting a release party for the issue, where Vu and Doan are going to read, and then a local Viet DJ Topazu is going to have this like incredible DJ set. Fort Point is sponsoring that aspect of the event. There's going to be food, refreshments, and it's going to be right next to the Tenderloin Museum's new and revived permanent play of the Compton's Cafeteria Riot, which is documents some of the most important trans history that we have in our country. So it's going to be a big day. I love that. I mean, Vu, you're going to be in it. We're going to be in it from like 3 to 7, which is so
and
fun.
It ends in a dance party, which is always the best way to
do like your birthday. In the image of your birthday,
I'm all for it.
We will be ending in a dance party.
I love it. Yeah, I love all of that. I will say for our listeners, there are links in the episode description to check all of that out also and to pre-order the issue. So I definitely suggest you do it. T, Vu, and Rita, thank you again for joining me today. I had a blast. And
thank you so much, Nate.
Thank you, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
Good to see you, Rita and T.
Thanks. Yeah.
Talk to you later. Soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.